stay home and chill, keeping you company during the coronavirus.
Hey, this is Cece Coleman from First Dates. You can catch me on FUBAR Radio. This is just a little reminder, if you're thinking about going out or you have been out, please, please, please stay at home. This isn't about you. There is a bigger picture to all of this. We need to be thinking about everyone else. We need to come together because we are all in this together. Hey, this is Cece Coleman from First Dates. You're listening to Stay Home and Chill on FUBAR Radio, keeping you company through the coronavirus.
Michael Payne and Marcel Somerville on FUBAR Radio.
We've got motherfucking Homie Poku from Top Boy in the motherfucking building!
What's going on, Jim?
Thank you, thank you.
What's shit, good, man? Fuck calming down. We've got Homie Poku from Top Boy in the studio. Best day of my life, mate, in all my years of broadcasting. Because I'm really, 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 like, infatuated with Top Boy. Not infatuated, but you know what I mean? I love it. I genuinely think that your casting was one of the, in general, best castings I've ever seen. You played that character so well. Right? And it was actually really surprising to find out that you are younger in real life than your fucking character on Top Boy. Such is the levels of your performance, because you acted that like you were going through uni at the time, or were going through uni at the time. Do you know what I mean? How did you get into acting? How did you get into drama?
So I used to act when I was younger, like around like 10, 11. I used to go to like this performing arts school. It was like acting, singing, dancing, like all that type of stuff. And I stopped for ages, actually. I only got like back into it when, literally the year that I got cast off the Top Boy. So when first got cast off the Top Boy, I was 16, 18 now. And when we first started filming that year, I joined the agency, joined Sylvia Young.
Right.
And I started getting back into it, started going to auditions and stuff. And it was literally pretty much when I joined that agency, a Top Boy audition came around the corner and literally just went for it. And
amazing.
It was successful.
Stoked, man.
What a fucking touch.
That's dope, bro. You never know how it's going to happen, but it happens when it happens.
This is true. This is very true. When you got the role, what did you think? How challenging was it to kind of get into, assume the character of someone in uni?
It was hard at first because obviously my character's 19. Mm. I was 19 and at the time I was 16.
Yeah.
So I was just doing GCSEs.
16-year-old stuff.
Yeah. So I was doing, just finished GCSEs, and they wanted me to embody a character that's doing in uni. And he's quite different to how I am. Like, Aaron's quite reserved. He's quite quiet. Usually he's quiet in the room. And it was hard at first, but I don't know. I think I just sort of eased into it as we went through like rehearsals, as we did like chemistry with other characters and stuff like that. And yeah, so he's into it, really.
Yeah. Did you have to spend a lot of time with Michael Ward and
Aralyn?
Yes.
Yeah. We did a lot of chemistry prior to when we started filming. Aralyn actually knew before.
Okay,
he
that's
the same
good.
School as me.
Yeah.
So I knew him from before. So we really had that relationship. We had
nice
chemistry on screen.
Oh, wicked.
Got with Michael from the first time I saw him. So we had good chemistry, like, initially anyway.
Yeah, you could kind of see that on the screen. It was like, you felt like you were actually brothers, didn't it?
Definitely, definitely. That, I don't want to give away spoilers for the idiots that haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, but them being brothers ain't a spoiler, innit?
No, but I mean, I was just talking about specific.
Yeah. Oh, no.
Specific. Oh, my God.
I'm brothers. No.
I can't watch this. Those two guys with the same surname. You know they're brothers, innit?
That's ridiculous, man. Spoiler.
How sort of challenging was it? Because a lot of Top Boy, you are a Hackney boy.
Yeah.
Born and raised. And were you ever scared that, like, people were going to just get gassed and, like, come to where you were filming? And did you have to be quite secretive about, like, locations and whatnot?
Yeah, so obviously I couldn't really post anything.
Yeah.
Saying, oh, we're going to be filming Top Boy here. We had to refer to it as, what was you referring to it as? I can't remember. It wasn't even called Top Boy. On the scripts, it wouldn't say Top Boy. It wouldn't say anything like that. It was quite secretive, as in the whole where we'll be filming, when it's coming out, all that type of stuff. It wasn't really open like that. So, of course, we had to just, like, stay off socials when it came to Top Boy, really. Yeah, we couldn't say too much about it.
Talking around the script, it says uppermost male child. I'm assuming you've met Drake, who kindly kind of took on the role of producer.
Yeah,
he produced it, didn't he? How sort of hands-on was he when it came to, you know, reads and shooting even?
Yeah,
did he ever sort of come around when you were shooting on locations?
Not when I was shooting, but I know he was around quite a lot. From the beginning, like the first time I was doing anything to do with Top Boy was the read-through.
Yeah.
First read-through. So I've got the role like the weekend, literally, I think 2 days later, there was a read-through straight away. Actually, I got a funny story about this. I was on NCS at the time. So at NCS, we were doing the residential stay. So I was just chilling in my tracksuit at NCS. And then I got a call from agent and said, oh, you got to get down to this read-through. I'm like, when? Like, oh, next week or something. He's like, nah, now. I'm like, I'm at NCS, like, I can't even get down there. But I ended up just like rushing down there. I didn't even change anything. So I was just in a baggy tracksuit, just chilling. I didn't know it was going to be so like, it wasn't formal, but like, I didn't know it was so serious because I hadn't been in a read-through before. It was the first thing I've done, like, acting wise.
Yeah.
So I didn't even know how it was. Got down there, everyone, I see Ashley Waters, I see Dave, I'm like, yo, like, because I'm a big Dave fan.
Yeah.
So I'm like, yeah, I'm starstruck basically. And we're just going through the script, and then it must have been like halfway through. Yeah. Everyone, like, the door just burst open. I see everyone turn around and gasp. I'm like, who is it? Like, what's going on? I see Drake just there, just chilling. Like, just there. Like, yo, it was good. Like, just here. It was mad.
Yeah.
That's sick.
Did it really hit home at that point?
Yeah,
like, then, I'm in a big ting.
Yeah, that's when I realized this, like, is real. This is real. Like, I can feel it.
Incredible. The Prem was a massive event.
Yeah.
I was quite gutted about that because it actually took place on my road and not one person thought to extend a little plus one.
Sorry.
Moment of silence for that. A lovely name, by the way, man. I think, like, I'm of the Nigerian descent myself, and I think my parents dropped the ball not giving me one of those, like, really positive names like Hope or Joy or Charity or good name, Hope.
Thank you.
What's your ultimate goal?
Just keep acting.
Yeah?
No, just keep acting. I just want to do different types of roles.
Do you want to do something, like, really deep and Oscar-worthy? Do you want to be a superhero? Do you want to be, like...
Yo, imagine being the next Black Panther, like, just like, yo.
Yeah.
I'll back that.
Being
still.
A superhero would be mad, actually.
Yeah.
I don't know. I feel like being a superhero would be cool. Doing something like deep and Oscar-worthy. Yeah. Like, that's the main goal as an actor. That's something you want to do. That's, like, fulfilling. And, like, yeah, I think that's the end goal, really.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, man. I am a big fan. Like, genuinely, I was, like, so, so gassed about you coming in. And you did not disappoint, man. You've been an absolute gent. Thank you so much to Hopik Poku for joining us.
Sarah Hugh and Doc 2 on FUBAR Radio.
We're lucky now to be joined by definitely a legend. We've got Beardy Man, who beatboxer, producer, multi-instrumentalist, bloody just about everything. Mate, welcome to the studio for starters.
Yeah, man.
Oh, how are you doing?
Thanks for having me. How are these levels?
We had a lot of consternation about which mic I should use. This is good. I put my radio voice.
Very nice. You do bring a lot of toys in the studio, so we were just trying to make sure you're comfortable, that's all.
Oh, thanks. I've actually brought way less toys than I usually tour with. Usually I've got like a giant sort of
lots of shit
multi-laptop crazy thing that I take around. Yeah, I've just got one little box today.
It's crazy to see the journey that you've been on through your career. I mean, obviously I've watched it very, very closely because, you know, we are tied together in a strange way career-wise.
Tied together right now in the studio.
Because, you know, I used to host the beatbox championships.
Right.
And there was one year, I think it was at the Forum, perhaps, and there was a beatboxer from round the way that I knew called Faith SFX. So I was, you know, even though I was the host and I'm supposed to be impartial, I was like, I hope Faith wins, you know. And, you know, I was bigging him up in every round. And then this clown comes through called Beardy Man. And literally, even when I announced his name, I think I said it with, like, you know, some disdain. You know? And there were some chuckles from the crowd. And he came up. Everyone else was just beatboxing, as you do.
Yeah.
And then this motherfucker's doing, like, sound effects, different voices, like an impressionist. And everybody was stunned. Like, I mean, literally, no one had ever seen anything like it. And I looked at Faith and I just saw it, like, in his eyes, and it, like, we both knew, like, straight. The game was up and there was a new champ. And since then, obviously, you've just gone from strength to strength. But I always wondered, because I never really talked to you about it, like, how did it all begin for you? Were you ever, like, interested in impressionism or, like, say, who's your man who does stand-up now that was also in the Police Academy film, Michael Winslow? Were you inspired by him? Was it hip-hop from the start, or did that sort of join in with the things that you were already interested in?
Well, I was always, like, the kid in the back of the class who makes weird noises. There's always one that was me. And so, like, I never thought of it as a career, do you know what I mean? It was always just, like, a weird thing that I did at parties sometimes when everyone's standing in a circle smoking. And they're like, oh, like, do that thing. Yeah, exactly. And I thought that was literally the end of it. And then at uni, when I was about 20, I guess, I got a Razel CD. My mate burst into my room and be like, you've got to listen to this. Yeah. And he played me the last track, which was him doing the beat and the chorus at the same time.
If your mother only knew.
At the same time.
Exactly. So then I was like, oh shit, this could be like a job. So, so I started sort of taking it more seriously then. And I realised that actually my whole life, when I'd been keeping this weird sort of, I thought, habit to myself, actually I'd been sort of in
training.
Thought
you had a problem.
Yeah, exactly. I thought it was a disease, but it was a superpower.
What were some of the noises that you used to do, like, when you were younger?
I had engines and, like, you know, like a...
like, the four of us are all standing in a circle and we're all at a party or something like that. What would be some of the noises that you might just randomly come out?
Like, I
would,
14, like, age 14, 15.
I had this weird, like, routine that I would do where I was, like, mime being, like, a World War One fighter pilot. And I'd, like, put on goals, like that, and then jump in this biplane and be like, like this, and then, like, make the plane crash and shit.
How did that get with girls?
It's a party. Scared them off much of the time, but, like, yeah.
Come for driving my car.
No, to be honest, it started, like, once I actually sort of started doing it on a stage and turning it from just some stupid party trick into, like, I started to focus on it. Faith SFX was an early influence of mine. Because he's amazing.
Yeah, he's
so
great.
Like, never attained his level of skill. Like, so that's the thing. I was always making up for my sort of lack of real sort of detailed beatbox chops with stupid jokes and stuff and sound effects and whatever else.
I wonder if that was the thing that really pushed you on to the next level, because I think about Faith, he was like the only kind of hood beatboxer. Like, I'd never met anybody like him who had that kind of street thing, but he could do the beats for a freestyle as well and not spit on anyone. He was like crazily cool with it. Do you know what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, I mean,
you widened it out somehow. I mean, you brought comedy to it first and foremost.
Well, yeah, just
before I was even doing comedy, you would you had elements of comedy to your shit, which is brave in a world like hip-hop where it's very po-faced.
I didn't really have any other option. Well, firstly, I've always felt that beatboxing is inherently silly. Doesn't matter.
Yeah, a grown man doing fart noises for money.
Exactly. That's
amazing.
To rock up on a stage, be like, ugh. It's not, you can't. So I just thought, well, I'll sort of clown it, and that seemed to work. Since then, I've sort of gone from there, because I never felt entirely comfortable doing sort of, you know, beatbox battles or whatever. Like, I didn't feel like there was a place for me in hip-hop. I thought maybe, well, like, what can I do with this? And actually, you know, my focus has always been electronic music and, I mean, whatever. Like, I see music as this just vast panoply of options. It doesn't matter what it is. I don't discriminate by genre, if you know what I mean.
But hip-hop looks up to you, though. You must feel that. Like, you must feel, like, the love that hip-hop has for you.
Well, it's been a huge part of my life. There's no one kind of music that I listen to more than any other. It feels like they're all ingredients. Do you know what I mean?
So it's like.
I mean, there would be no beatbox if there wasn't for hip-hop.
Of course.
Was, like, the seventh element.
And I suppose, like, rap is the one genre of music that has a real DIY aesthetic. It doesn't frown on it in the way that, like, so let's say sometimes if you joined, like, a rock and roll band, then you're like, what do you play? And you're like, well, I kind of do things with my lips. You're like, oh, right. So you're not a proper musician.
What's your favourite beatbox sound?
Maybe like a record rip.
I have a favourite. Do you have a favourite?
Oh, your favourite beatbox sound? What's
no,
it?
What's your
favourite? I always like Dougie Fresh thing that he did inside his cheek.
Oh, the click like roll.
That shit. I don't know what. Yeah. Yeah, that shit. I love that.
Yeah.
Oh, that was my favourite sound. Oh, no. Just stole it from me.
I stole your favourite.
Of course, that was Sarah's. Young man.
Hey, Beauty Man, you have brought some toys in. We kind of wanted to play some strategically, so you said even while we were chatting, you could do a couple of things.
I'm not sure people understand what we're talking about when you're talking about your toys.
Yeah, just so maybe you should clarify.
He's got a fire truck. He's going to do the live noise of a fire, and a teddy bear. He's going to do the live squeak, squeak.
This looks like a toy. The thing made
what actually
noise.
Is it? What have you actually brought in? Just explain what we're looking at here.
You're looking at the Boss RC-505 loop station. It's a thing that it'll actually go...
So that loop, that's nice.
Can you hear that? That sounds fat. Sounds fat, not the
one. I can hear that.
So yeah, it's a looper. Not like a pooper scooper. That kind of technology.
So is that the green box or the black box?
It's the black box.
Oh, so what's the green box?
Black box are amazing. Do you remember that? What was that big hit?
Right on time! Right on time! Right on time!
No.
Yeah, the green box is got all different. I bought it for like 100 quid in a shop, and it sounds like shit. But it's fun because it's good for doing like Dalek noises and stuff. So check this out. Effective. I don't know if anyone wants to drop a freestyle.
Oh, I think we're going to do that. We're going to get you to make a beat for Doc's rap about anything a bit later.
No, I don't.
I'll just fade that out there.
Right, so we only have a couple minutes left, so I should shout out everybody while Beardy Man's setting up the beat for this rap about anything. Everybody who sent in some suggestions. I've had 4 or 5 Jeremy Corbyns. Thank you for that. We're not going to do that. Beardy's done that already.
Lucky you.
Al Barry, shout out Dom. Shout out Martin Ross. Shout out, oh my God, Chris Peary. Minxley Boy. Oh my days, everybody. Jamie Burns. Phil Davenport, so many of you, Nattington, have been in touch today. Thank you, everybody. If I didn't shout you out, I'll shout you out next week. The winner, if you can call it that, this week is Martin Ross, at MartinRoss44 on Twitter, who suggested that I rap about words that are hard to rhyme, which sounded like a challenge, Martin. I've gone for it. So let's have a look here. What's Beardy Man got? Let me get my headphones on. Oh, nice. Nice pace.
Here we go.
Foobs, let's do it. Yeah. Beardy Man on the beat, dot B on the rhymes. It's how we do. I can rap about anything, it's party time. Martin Ross wants some words that are hard to rhyme, but I just don't believe they exist. At least not to me, cause I'm just too sick. Nope, nope, I don't have a problem with orange, cause you could peel an orange in college when you're in Norwich. Yeah, or eat some porridge in West Bromwich and finish it all off with a Cumberland sausage. Some people say your tricky one is purple, but I can run a circle around a turtle called Myrtle and hurtle across a kick and snare like what? With Beardy Man providing the drums like a boss. Keep the words coming in, man, I feel ya, but I'll kill ya if you try and suggest silver. Or I might punch you in the esophagus if you say it's impossible to rhyme with rhinoceros. And I don't believe there is a schism. I'll rhyme anti-disestablishmentarianism. I'm the dude who rap with swag and this is that precocious. Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. You know this. Yeah.
Amazing.
Ah, that's legendary.
Joey Page on FUBAR Radio.
I am now very excited about this. I am absolutely thrilled and delighted to welcome on the line now the legendary Mr. Neville Staple.
Oh my gosh, I thought you were going to say the original Rude Boy.
You are the original Rude Boy. It's just such a treat to have you on the show, so thanks for joining us. Now, a couple of things, obviously, I'm sure you get asked about these kind of things all the time. Be poor journalism from me if I didn't bring them up. Because as you said right at the beginning, you are the original Rude Boy, so you basically invented British ska. How does that make you feel when people say that to you?
Well, I didn't invent it. I'll tell you how it started. It was Jerry Dammer's idea.
Yeah.
To mix ska with punk. He used to play Jamaican music records because he used to hang out with a lot of Jamaicans when he went to the Polytechnic. He'd like the music, so he mixed it together.
You know, obviously, it's still such an important movement in music today, and nothing has ever really rivaled it or overtaken it in terms of importance. And obviously, that's helped you to still continue to, you know, be going strong and to be playing
on
in all
stage.
Sorts of festivals all over the world, and you're revered by many, many people. And surely you can't have imagined that that would have been the case when you were starting out.
No, I did not. And what's nice about it, you've got the young kids now. Well, not the young kids. The younger generation now, they remember it, and we've got some playing it now. They support me. They still love it because they heard it from their dads or their moms. It's great to know that it's still carrying on. Although I used to love punk, but we're not seeing that again.
Have you heard of a band called Slaves?
No.
Yeah, they're basically, like, they're doing really well at the minute. Done a lot of festivals over the summer, and they get a lot of, like, airplay on commercial stations, and they are basically a punk band. They're really good, actually.
Are they kind of like The Clash? And
they sound, they're not, I'm sure, but they sound really violent. They're just two guys from Kent, like young guys from Kent, and it's really good, really like aggressive and in your face, and it's something that hasn't been around for a long while, but yeah,
well,
really
that's
good.
Where we got our idea from, to be honest with the punk.
Well, it's back, so hopefully maybe somebody will get an idea to do something interesting with it in the way that you did. I was reading an interview, I think it's from about a year ago, viewing, and it really hit the nail on the head. It feels like we're in very similar times to back when you was creating this kind of music, politically, and just how everything seems so boring and sort of mundane.
Like it's saying, with the specials, I mean, it's not the same as From Boy 3, that was just a stopgap. But the music, the specials, and the ska movement, I just love it, because when I'm on stage, I play with the audience, I feed off the audience, I always have done. But it was getting a bit stale in the specials, because I couldn't be myself, really. I'm a showman, basically.
Yeah, I was reading about it, and they basically have to kind of do what they... rigid.
Song goes for 3.5 minutes, so you play 3.5 minutes. With my band, the song might be 3.5 minutes on the record, but I play what the crowd wants to hear. If they're loving solo, I'll say to Warren on trombone, like Message to You or whatever, come round again. Like me, round again and playing, you know, keep the solo going. Because you see what the crowd's into, and I might stop the band. I say, stop. And the crowd will keep singing. And I'll say, you come and your turn, sing. It's like that. It looks like we're having a party. Although the specials were there, the first time round was brilliant. But when we reformed, it wasn't the same.
Because it's so identical, like rigid and structured.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
can't say anything because it'll start an argument. Yeah. Don't want to get slated for saying things, but that's just how life is, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Does it just come naturally now? Do you still have to do lots of rehearsals?
Nah.
Just straight out?
Yeah, oh yeah. Like I say, I'll make things up as I'm...
As you're going
doing
along.
It. I'll do the songs, but then I'll make stuff up as well. I'm an entertainer.
Yeah, of course.
I don't know GCB or Wolfoot. I don't know none of that. They play, and if it's not nice, I said, oh, could you try what you just done? Oh, I like what you just done there. Can you do it? I then go, oh, I like that C. Can you put that G in? You know what I mean? I'm just into entertaining.
And you are very entertaining, Neville, and long may it continue.
Tuesday Takeover with Henry Dean on FUBAR Radio.
What's going on, people? Welcome to the show. My name's Henry Dean. This show's called Feet Wet. We're going to be talking about getting those all-important first steps in the career of your choice, in the creative arts, in media. I, by trade, am a director and photographer. I work mostly in music, a little bit in fashion, make some branded content, all that fun stuff. Today, we're just in here to spill the beans on how we get started, because there's a lot out there in the world on the internet about how people level up through the industry and famous people's stories. But I know when I was starting out, I was thirsty for knowledge about how to take those very first steps, and what can I do today, and what can I do right now? What do I need to work on in order to get where I want to go? So I thought it would be cool to put the show together for the takeover here on FUBAR Radio, get some guests in, talk a little bit about their world, how they've established themselves in it, and what they think you need to do as well to follow in their footsteps. Ash Nico's in the house.
Eat my pussy like it's lunch.
For those of you who don't know, Ash Nico is a recording artist, critically acclaimed recording artist, Ash Nico. She's joining us here in the FUBAR studio. Charles Morey's still here as well.
Hey, Charles Morey.
Hello. So, Ash, like Charles, you also moved here from afar a little while ago. Why don't you just fill the listeners in slightly on your story of how you arrived here in London.
Hey guys, I'm Ash Nico. So I moved to the UK when I was 18 years old from Latvia, where I spent my high school years, which is where I'm not from. I'm from North Carolina in the United States of America. So I knew that I wanted to do music since I was about 14. And that's when I first started writing my rhymes, learning how to song write. And then I moved here.
Why London? What gave you that? What gave you that jump start? What made you want to come here in the first place from Latvia?
Well, I wanted to get away from my parents first and foremost. I also like since I was so I'm from like small town. Well, basically when I was a kid, I like hated everyone. And I was just like, you small town motherfuckers. Y'all don't know anything. I was just so, like, elitist. I thought I was, like, above everyone in my small town, which, in hindsight, I was a dickhead. But I knew that I wanted to live in a big city from a very young age, and I chose London because I am also a European, so I decided I really like London. It's, like, a really nice hub. I feel like, so I was also thinking about New York or LA. So it was between the three cities. And LA are not very easy to get to.
They're not. Mm. Not from Riga.
Not from Riga. I mean, they are easy to get to, but like, I just feel like London is more of a hub.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
I agree. I think London, I've been really coming around to this opinion a little more recently, but I think London is the
it feels like the center, hub. The center of everything, really.
Culturally, I think this is popping right now. Like, what's cool in London is the driving force of what's cool around the world. What I admire about you is that you, before you even moved here, you were coming here on weekends, you were like involving yourself in the scene. And I think that is hard, especially when you don't know anyone. We were just talking about earlier, moving to a new city and not knowing anyone.
Mm-hmm.
The hard thing is answering that question of like, well, how do I meet people? How do I get to know the people that I need to know?
I have kids in my DMs. They're like, oh, like, how do you, like, make those connections?
Yeah.
And, like, you can tell people as much as you want, like, follow your dreams and never stop hustling. And it's a great sentiment. But, yeah, it is, like, how do you actually do it?
When you arrived in London as a fresh-faced teen with some diss tracks on the internet that popped off in Latvia, but not knowing anyone else here, how did you transition from, okay, I'm this teenager that's in the big city that wants to make it happen to I'm Ash Nico.
Confidence, baby. No, because you don't all of a sudden like access this database of people that you should know.
Precisely.
It just kind of happens gradually. And all of a sudden you then look back, you take account of how, where you are in the moment. And you're like, oh, wait, I'm actually doing all right. And I've done that recently. I've now looked at myself and I've been like, I am a professional.
Yeah.
I'm actually a professional at what I do. And I know a lot of people in this industry, which is something that when I was 18, I would have done anything for. But when I was 18, I wanted it right then. I didn't have any patience. I wanted it right then.
Tom Latcham on FIBAR Radio.
Now, I'm pleased to announce my next guest is a man I admire hugely. He's basically got the job I want, being as I am a, well, I got into journalism, ended up going down the show business route. Not quite the route I dreamed of when I got into journalism, but this is a man who has gone down, I would imagine, his perfect path. He's an award-winning writer, documentary maker. His name's John Ronson. I'm sure you've heard of him. He's the author of a whole number of best-selling books, including The Psychopath Test, The Men Who Stare at Goats, and Them, Adventures of Extremists.
Public shaming.
Let's let him tell us. So, John, in a short, pithy sentence, and I'm sure you're used to it because you've been doing the rounds speaking about your book.
Well, it's about how we have become the crazy, powerful, cruel people, how we've kind of redefined human behaviour, you know, to a large extent because of social media. Basically, how we've just started tearing people apart for the tiniest transgression. Nice people like us are going on Twitter, we tell a joke that is badly worded, and then other nice people like us rip them apart and completely destroy their lives. And it's not like abstract, it's real. And I, because most of my books have been about crazy, powerful, cruel people over there, like doing crazy things in Guantanamo Bay or the Bilderberg Group or, you know, in Broadmoor or, you know, whatever. I suddenly realised, you know, the crazy, powerful, cruel people are now are us. We are the crazy people. Mm. So it felt really important to me that I wrote a book about trying to work out why that was.
What was it specifically that made you think, hang on, there's something in this as a project and a book?
It's always kind of hard to say because it sort of just evolves over years. I mean, I was writing this book for about 3 years, but there's certainly moments, you know, that happened when I was writing the book when I thought, oh, my God, you know, this is, I'd so have to write this book. Even though I mean, I don't know about you, Tom, but I'm a fan of Randy Newman. Are you a fan of Randy Newman?
I've not heard of it. Who's Randy Newman?
Oh, my God. Randy Newman's like the greatest singer-songwriter of our, times.
Right.
And he once sang this song called Short People. This is like his most famous song. Okay. Short people have got no reason to live. Short people got no reason to live. And even though it was quite obviously a joke about the insanity of prejudice... And he actually didn't have anything against short people. I mean, who, you know, would. He was kind of torn apart a little bit.
Really?
And I felt, but not so bad. I mean, there was like, you know, it was kind of a joke. And then he got on with his life. Mm.
But then, of course, we have, you know, the most ironic thing, for instance, with the Ched Evans, the Sheffield United player who was convicted of rape. And then you had all of his sort of fans saying about the woman who was raped or people involved in the case, you know, putting rape threats against them. People tend to lose their minds on Twitter. Why do you think that
is? Lose their minds. Because, you know, what we actually know about human beings is that we're all a mixture of flaws and sins and talents and wisdom and stupidity. But on social media, we have created this sort of stage for constant high dramas. Mm. Everyone's either, you know, a kind of, you know, a hero or a villain. We go extreme about everything. And that's not actually how people are as human beings.
Payne and Sylvester Incorporated on FUBAR Radio.
We've got a very special guest in the building right now.
Very, very
man.
Special.
Huge guest. Huge, huge guest. It's K-Van Novak, man. You're
Hi. I'm not clapping myself.
No, man, you've got to. You've got to.
Please, stop. Please. I'm not. Come on. I'll go on this. Yeah, that's good. Okay, all right. Enough. Thank you. Thank you so much. Thank you.
Beautiful. Thanks for coming in, man. You're a BAFTA winner.
Am I? Yes.
Yes. It was over. It's 14 years ago now. I won that BAFTA for something.
Yeah, I am. I'm a BAFTA winner. I walk around going, I won a BAFTA.
So what does a BAFTA look like again?
It's like a mask.
Yeah, that's
like a
it. Golden it's the drama mask. Yeah, that's
yeah, the drama
one.
Mask.
Yeah, I would fully just bowl around with it like that.
Pretty heavy.
Do you get to take home that one, or do you have to give it back?
One that's just there on the night that they hand to people, and then you hand it back, and then they engrave your name on your own special BAFTA.
And then you get it later.
And then
the
you
post.
Get it later, yeah.
Fair play. The whole sort of concept of playing every character, were you inspired by anyone to do that, or is that just something that you just naturally did because you couldn't get anyone good enough to play any of the characters for you?
You know, I started off doing impressions as a lot of comedians do, mimicking, you know, my teachers at school. Before it was Phone Jack, it was just me kind of pretending to be other people on the telephone. Mm-hmm. Then I realized through radio and sound I could be 15 different people in the way that I couldn't if I was an actor. I could just be someone that looks like me. Hello, how are you today? I'm your doctor.
Listen, I wanted to take an explosive device and put it in there.
You know what I mean? These are the characters I was playing. So I managed to escape from that typecasting, and then Facejacker with the prosthetics allowed me again just to do 10 different characters and play a 60-year-old white guy and a 40-year-old guy in a wheelchair, and you know, Augustine, Augusto, yes, indeed, say, you know, the bank account details and all that stuff.
Have you ever had like a hairy moment when pranking someone?
Yeah,
like
yeah.
Really kind of it could have got a bit peak for
well,
you.
I mean, I've told this story many times, but when I was doing Facejacker, I was Augustos, and he went to the Morrisons, local Morrisons in Camden, and got dressed up in the uniform and went and sat on till number 5. And they started to put the items through, but the chill was not on, so I was going, burp, burp, burp. Until basically some of the people were like, what are you doing? It don't work here. I'm like, yes, I do. I have my work experience. So they chased me out of the shop, and I'm just
that Morrison's get ducked, man.
Yeah, it does.
That one is run by Mark Morrison.
They want that £5 an hour, didn't they?
Yeah. So I'm running out the car park, and I just hear this guy say, I'm faster than you. And he just grabbed me in a headlock and just threw me to the floor. And
nothing proves speed like a headlock.
It's true. Well, I mean, I was doing a comedy run as well. I thought they were filming that. I didn't realize I was going to get put in a headlock and like slammed to the ground. And next thing I know, I'm in a police car and they're radioing in my description, which is a 55-year-old heavily set black man, to show them my wrists.
That's brilliant. We get our listeners to send in some hump day help queries.
Yeah, and sure. Yeah.
Nothing would be better for them than to have some advice from the one and only K-Van Novak.
This one's from Jack. He says, hi gang, my girl wants to be my queen. I mean, she's already, but she wants to take it more literally. She bought these royal socks from the 1800s for me and her. She told me she gets turned on by them and will only have sex if we both wear them. Recently, she said that she wants us to put the same socks on, so both feet go in the same sock.
Have you just learned how to read? Sorry.
No, a lot of our listeners have just learned how to write.
She likes doggy style, and because I'm taller than her, my leg will have to be at a weirder angle so the sock can't come off. I'm struggling with this. What do I do?
So the sock is, over... So what they're wearing a unisock. I think he needs to get into character. You know, if he's going to go to the 1800s and show her a good time, then he's got to talk to her like, a dandy in the 1800s.
Yeah.
Bend over now, you little bitch. That's it. I'm the man in the long white socks. What do you mean it looks like a button mushroom? Take that. And that. And these.
100% agreement with that.
Yeah, yeah. Cool.
Can I read out the next one, then you can...
Sure.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
This one will be brought to you by Bunkle Brian.
Yes.
Hello. Who's this from?
Waz.
Never had a Waz before. Actually, I have. Hello. I got this Orange Permanent Barker, good quality, from Bamazon. I love Bamazon, don't you? Are you on Bamazon Prime?
Bamazon Prime.
Prime. One blick and you're away. I wanted to make my dick and the whole area look tanned for a bit blonger. How's about making your dick look a bit blonger, darling? The orange makes it look like I have an STD. What kind of STD goes orange? Having said that, I do remember a trip to Brazil. I'd rather forget. Rather than just tan. The girl I hooked up with... Oh, sorry.
Did you just learn to read?
Stop it! How dare you, you young buck. The girl I hooked up with saw and just left and now keeps telling everyone my best ED is spreading like a orange. What do I do, Baz? If I'm honest, find the tallest window in the largest building you can. Throw yourself off, darling. There's no hope for you. But if you don't do that, then I live at number 67A Percival Street, SW BAM 6B BOO. So pop round and we'll take a look together.
There you go. Out. Absolutely.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Thank you.
Well, that's all we've got time for, I'm afraid, man. Yeah, you've got to leave us.
No, I haven't been out of my box in 4 years.
You're welcome to come back absolutely anytime,
thanks,
man. Got space for all here.
Great.
Ian Boldsworth on Foobar Radio.
We're joined now by Daniel Lawrence Taylor. Hello, sir.
Hello.
I've never met anybody who's done nude scenes before.
Really?
What?
In comedy? Surely it must happen all the
time. I've never done a nude show. Mum.
Oh, slam.
The irony of what I did in my one was I've often tried to keep it away from partners, let alone show it to an audience.
I don't know if I could do full frontal nudity.
Well, I mean, not to put a damper on it, but I think I was in the midst of a mental breakdown.
Okay, there we go. That's.
There's a podcast about it. There's a podcast still available on iTunes. I'll never get my bit out. I did once send my mum a picture of me bollock. The whole Prisma, the app.
Yeah,
you it take was a like... picture and it's sort of distorted to make it cartoon-like.
Oh, yeah, it's like a grade.
Okay. Put different filters on. I was bored one night and I'd like took pictures of my face.
He always tells
this
story
and...
by saying I was bored one night.
So I took a picture of my balls.
Well, I took a picture of my face and the cat and then I just thought, well, your balls look really weird anyway, don't they? So... I, just took a photograph of me nuts. I thought, oh, that looks really weird, that.
Wait till you...
I thought, that looks a bit spooky almost. So I, rotated it and zoomed it in a bit and put it on my Twitter and said, I've been sent this really weird photo. Because it was when I was doing the thing about ghosts. So loads of people were trying to look at it, trying to see what this thing was. But then I just thought, well, my mum will never see that. So I texted it to my mum and told her it was a magic eye picture.
My God.
You know them things where you have to put your face dead close to the eye?
Oh, my God.
So for a few days, my mum had a picture of me balls. Just relaxed. The right, and she's doing that trying to see a dolphin, right? The point where I told, because I didn't tell what it was, it just said, oh, it doesn't work, was it? Because she went, your dad's tried it and he can't see it either. So I was like, it doesn't really work. Because I thought, I don't want her taking it round my nana's, being like,
oh, yeah, let's draw a line somewhere. Yeah, that'd be a step too far, wouldn't it, mate?
Tuesday Takeover with Tiffany on FUBAR Radio.
Welcome to
to the Tiffany Takeover. Please welcome Tiffany to the studio.
Hello, everyone.
Welcome back.
Thank you. This is so exciting.
It's so exciting
and
to
thank
have
you for helping me today. Oh. So it's not, you know, it's a duo. You know, we're going to have a lot of guests on the show today.
Yes.
And, you know, a lot of these people that are coming on are either just starting their careers or have been legendary.
Yeah, talking of legendary.
Sure. Yes.
Bruce Foxton and Russell Hastings are here from the Jam.
Good afternoon.
Oh, look at that.
Look at that.
That was beautiful.
Yes.
Well, you're off for in October, aren't you?
Yep. Yep. We go to Australia, New Zealand, Hong Kong and Japan before that.
I can't wait to go back to Japan. How many trips have you been back to Japan now in your life?
Well, in the last year. We went last year, didn't we?
Yeah.
Oh, really?
From the Germany last year.
Oh,
yeah.
I love Japan. It's one of my favorite places to go.
The thing is, it's like literally a flying visit. You know, we're there for like one day or one and a half days and then we're off.
Yeah. Do you ever get a chance to?
Where's your favorite places to travel?
You know, well, where is your favorite place?
Well, my favorite place to go is Italy, and it's
really?
Rome.
Ah,
actually, if I was just going to go and get away, which I never get to do, but I have been saying for a year, I want to go to Hawaii. I want to go to Hawaii, and now I just got booked to go to Hawaii for 10 days.
I want to go.
So
there.
I'm going now.
Right.
I want to go to Rome. Yeah. I want to go.
Oh, okay.
I think that's how we're supposed to be doing this.
Do you guys think that, well, you know, when you like first started making music and doing this really for a career, did you kind of go, I'm going to deliberately manipulate where I want to go on holiday and try and push my tour to go where I want to go on holiday?
No, well, not for me. No. I mean, it didn't work like that, I don't think.
It didn't work like that for a long time. No, I think maybe sometimes people now have luxury a little bit. They can do that. But, you know, you're just... You kind of go where the music takes you a little bit.
I even gave up French lessons at school. Yeah. I thought I was never going to go abroad. What's the point?
Things changed a little bit then. Just a little bit.
Yeah, a wee bit. I've broadened my horizons.
Clacton and places like that.
Yeah.
Southend last week.
That's right. We were. Yeah, we were in Southend last week.
What's the Southend crowd like?
Great. They are great everywhere.
Who's all time the place that you go where you know they're going to be... like excitable, ready to party, a good vibe, a good energy? Is there a certain place? Is it the UK?
Well,
of course it is.
It's definitely the UK. Yeah, I thought you wanted to narrow it down a bit, but we're fortunate because wherever we play it seems to be, you know, vibey.
Yeah.
In terms of the change, Tiffany, I'm sure you'll be able to comment on this as well, in the music industry since when you started to now, is there any distinct things that you see that are different, good or bad, about the way it works now?
Wow. Oh, it's very completely different.
Yeah, it's completely different.
What? Completely different. I mean, where it's all, there's no money. There you go, cut to the chase. No one gives any money away, so everybody wants it on a plate these days. So it's whereas you used to be able to go out and perform, you know, go and record an album and then you'd do a tour to promote an album. It's the other way around. So, you know, and it's all crowdfunded these days. You know, everybody's crowdfunding and it's just completely upside down. So I suppose trying to get used to it, really.
Yeah, but it has changed, and it's even changed for me. Like, obviously I'm not a musician. I'm trying to pretend in a room full of iconic musicians that I'm a musician, but I'm not. It's changed even in my lifetime to see the difference. I mean, CDs to not even iTunes not even existing, you know. Change is massive. But, you know, your fans remain the same. They remain as, you know, they've got this allegiance to you.
I think the people don't change, though.
No.
You know, definitely. And the movement behind music, people still want good music. And there's something about, I believe, the Jam, their music, and, you know, I'm thankful my music. It makes people feel good. It takes them back to a time.
For sure.
You know, it's just, there's something about it that's really magical. And to be, you know, I can only speak for myself, but I think that you probably would agree that to be one of those artists, to have that is, again, a grateful thing. Because, you know, these fans keep turning up all around the world. And even though the industry is upside down and all the crazy, you can still get your music to them, which is easier a little bit nowadays, which is great.
Yeah.
But it is more work. You know, you got to get out there. You got to get on the road. I've been on the road for like 2 years now.
Yeah.
Literally. I haven't stopped.
Permanently.
And that's how it is.
Are you, in terms of like what you were just talking about with the fans and the longevity, it does come with, in a way, a high price of having to tour a lot, which is debilitating at the best of times. Is there anything you do to prep for tour? Because it's tiring. It's a lot.
What, for talking?
Touring.
Oh.
Also talking. I do have to prep for talking. I do a little la-la-la. No.
Yeah.
But when you go, when you know you're going to, like, for example, you're heading off 10th of October, and before that you're going all around the world.
Yeah.
Is there anything you have to do mentally, physically, to kind of prep for that?
Yeah, I don't know what it is, but I mean, you have to categorise it and put it all into a proper place and get your head round the fact that, you know, you're going to go in through different time zones and be tired and exhausted, and expect that. And when it does happen, and the wheels will fall off one day, you know, yeah. And it does happen, you know, and you find yourself crying because you haven't got any sugar, you know, or something crazy happens, and you just find yourself almost wanting to burst into tears.
Over a bit Spinal Tap.
Being on the road is so much fun because, again, you know, you're giving your music and everything. But I learned this year I need to just go to sleep sometimes. And I laughed at you when you said the sugar, cried over the sugar.
Sleeping,
I cried over
like
something, like granola fell on me one day and I just like lost it.
I would cry if granola fell on me.
But you know, you're around people all day long and sometimes you just really need to patrol yourself.
From a perspective of someone outside of it, the people right now are talking so much about this, and it's so interesting to hear you guys say that, because that is, I mean, a lot of people are talking about mental health in the music industry right now and making it a really important, discussion that, that artists are able to have. But it's great to hear also you guys talking about it. You know, you've been making iconic music for a long period of time, but it just shows that nothing has changed. People are just able to talk about it a bit more outside of, as you say, ringing up, you know, one of others to say, can I have a chat?
I think the taboo about, let's call it mental health or stress or strain or whatever you go through, you know, that taboo pretty much disappeared. And it's cool for me to turn around to someone and say, look, I'm having I'm struggling a bit, you know, whatever you're doing, it's no secret in my life.
There's no shame in it, is
there? No, it's none in mine. So. I've been 22 years sober. And my life's just been the most amazing roller coaster since then, and happy, and you know, I can deal with stuff today.
But it's wonderful to hear as well that candid conversation about mental health and about substance abuse, alcohol abuse, being something you can say, I can stand up and say, I quit this and I celebrate. Is it 23?
22 years
is an incredible feat, but also an amazing thing to discuss and tell people that you can do it.
Access all areas on FUBAR Radio.
We have the very lovely, very handsome Kai Sains with us.
Thank you.
Kai, thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
You are X Factor alumni, aren't you? That's what we can call you.
Yeah, if you like. I mean,
that's the face you often get when you say that to a former X Factor contestant.
I'm looking forward to the day when I just have my name.
Well, the thing is that's where most people will have first heard of you, right?
Of course, of course.
And actually, I think that 2012 was the last really good year of X Factor, when it was really at its peak.
I'd agree with that, even though obviously I'm going to agree with that, but it was the last time that a lot of people kind of came off the back of it and did quite well and had some big people on it. And even
who
Ryland,
else was on it that year?
Ryland, who's gone on to do amazing stuff with his television career. James Arthur won it, obviously. Ella was on it. And even there were some people that were on it that have gone on to do other things, nothing to do with the show, that can't take credit for it, but there was people that one guy's in Game of Thrones. He's got quite a big part.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Maybe I shouldn't say who, because he probably
it's over
want
now.
That to know. Well, it is over. He's a massive... He's a really nice guy. He didn't quite get onto the lives.
Oh, okay.
But he's been a huge person in Game of Thrones.
But it's funny with X Factor, because I can remember it. It was almost quite evident that was the last year when it was really good. Like, I can remember all the, like, most of the contestants, you know what I mean? Whereas... kind of dropped off a bit after that.
I don't think it's necessarily the people that were on it or that have gone on it since. I think it's just people just ready for something else.
Yeah, a bit tired of
that's it. That's why now Love Island's as big as how that used to be when it started, you know, and then that'll get tired and there'll be someone else.
Yeah, it's like, because actually when you watch bits of Love Island, it does look like Big Brother.
I love
which
Big
eventually
Brother.
People got tired of it, didn't they? And it kind of, and that's why it's off air now. So it happened to Love Island. I'm sure it happened to X Factor. Like you're saying, you're hoping one day people will kind of move on from it. Are you embarrassed by it?
No,
or like,
not at all.
So what is it you kind of, it's a bit of a machine,
experience.
Isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's experience. I think when I got to the point where I was going to do it, I'd already been signed a few times before.
I was going to say, you were quite successful before.
Yeah, I'd been in out of record companies since I was about 18, and I'd been in different bands, and then the band I had before the whole X Factor thing, it was kind of one of those situations. We signed this huge deal with Sony. They thought we were going to be like the next Coldplay, and then we did these amazing tours, and then just for like happens with everyone that signs, it just didn't quite connect and it didn't quite happen. It was the timing for the kind of music we were doing, and then I was kind of sitting there twiddling my thumbs a bit, and then I just thought, do you know what, why not? And so it was just another experience, and it was an experience. I'd always say more so an experience when you come off it.
Right.
Because you kind of, and it's kind of what everyone's dealing with at the minute, with how they're now actually looking after people when they come off these shows. Mm. Because
was that not the case when you did?
No, absolutely not. But again, I was a bit more prepared than, say, the guy that works in Clark's in the middle of nowhere and he goes and all of a sudden he's on TV, you know. Like, I'd already been through the mill with the record companies and press and stuff, so I was kind of a bit more prepared than most people, which I had to my advantage. But it's still a learning curve when you come off, you know.
Yeah It's funny actually, because I've been a journalist and covered X Factor for such a long time. I've just remembered I actually came to the studio the year that you were on it.
I feel like we have met.
We have. Yeah. It was very brief.
But you remember, I have that kind of impression on people. It's nice.
Well, it was, and they stopped doing that. They stopped inviting the journalists down to come and do all these chats, and we'd sit in the canteen, they'd bring people out. Sometimes you'd be waiting hours because they're doing sound checks and all this other stuff. Yeah. Eventually, they stopped doing that, and I think so. The press then weren't really so on side because you weren't getting access to people, and then it all just kind of dropped off a bit over the years. Are you going to go back?
No.
I said, would you never?
I said no.
Oh, did they ask you?
I had an email.
No.
I said no, thanks.
What is it you said no? Why? Just didn't fancy it again? You've got your own thing going on now.
Stuff going on, you know? Yeah. And it wasn't really me when I was doing it. And I think, you know, if you know what you're already about and you know what you're doing, and I was writing songs and producing songs for other people as well before. Mm-hmm. So when you go into that machine, you have to be fully 100% okay to just say, do with me what you want.
Yeah, you sell yourself over.
Yeah, and I kind of wasn't. I played ball to a certain extent, but at the same time, I knew what I was about and I knew what kind of music I wanted to do and what I wanted to sing on the show each week. So, it's
so it was a big fat no from you.
It's a big fat no from me, but whoever's doing it, I wish them well. I'm sure
it'll be good telly, you know, people. Time. Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, it's not for me. Ian Boldsworth on Fubar
Radio. On the line now, we have a car. It's a car.
Well, yeah, you're interviewing a car today.
Got a car on. Tamer?
Yeah.
Tamer?
Yeah.
We're having a discussion about how to pronounce your name.
Tam. The Americans say Tamer.
I'm going to go with Tam. Is that right?
Yeah, that
one. Tam Hassan, right. So, I'll tell you what the situation is. Thank you for joining us, by the way. Where are you driving to?
I'm on my way to Liverpool.
Oh, I'm sorry, man. Why are you going there?
Don't be sorry. We're going to have a night out. I've bought some properties up there, so I've got to meet the estate agent up there, and we're going to have a night out. I'm with my cousin, H. We're on the M1.
Do you know where you should go? You should go. There's a comedy club called Baby Blue on the Albert Dock.
I've heard about that place. Right. We're looking for something to go. So
mate, go there, get fucking leathered and really act up.
Okay, perfect.
Like, really ruin the show.
Can I heckle?
By all... Mate, you knock yourself out. Whatever you want to do, you do it. I hate it. I hate that club.
Done. I'm going to do that especially for you.
Go ruin it. Fantastic. Is that's conspiracy? That's conspiracy, isn't it? Although I don't advise that, but obviously if you want to do it, I can't stop you from doing it. So,
okay, no problem.
I've brought my assistant producer into the room, Adam, who I believe you spoke to already.
Yes,
in real life. Because Adam's all up to speed on Game of Thrones, and I've never seen it. Adam, can you do a spoiler-free interview?
All right, I just want to ask Tamer, like, how has it been, like, working from, like, because now they're completely off the books, aren't they? Series 6 is completely, like, it's gone off script. Like, there's no input from...
It's not off script.
Not off script, you know what I mean?
No, they've passed the writer. The writer...
That's it.
Overtaken the writer. I hear that the writer's poorly, so... I don't know what's happening with Season 7. There's going to be a Season 7, but there's still going to be a Season 7, and they're bringing the zombie element into it.
I'll write it.
You're right, yeah, well, listen, I'd write it.
Right, here's what happens. Right. Tam has got, it's like a sword, but it's actually a laser sword.
Yeah, that works.
Right.
A lightsaber.
Good, let's call it that. And...
A lightsaber.
What happens with your, what did you say, lightsaber, did you say? Your lightsaber, you've got a lightsaber, right, that gets given to you because
it... Let's call it a
Tam Saber. Tam Saber, yeah, that's fine. And it was your... When it's given to you, you find out it was your father's before you. Right?
Yeah.
Given to you by, like, a creepy old man.
Yeah.
That you just meet in the street, essentially.
Yeah.
And you go back his house, which you shouldn't really do, but you do that.
Does he breathe heavy?
He can. however you want, however, because you're directing this as well, so however you want to direct it, you're cool, mate.
You've got a heavy breathing dad.
Yeah. No, it's not your dad. He's not your dad. He gave you this lightsaber and said it was your dad's.
Oh, it was my dad's. Okay.
Yeah. And then basically you just
have. Could it be my uncle then?
Well, potentially it could be a sort of an uncle.
All right. Okay. So we've got a dead dad, an uncle, a town saver, and we're in the street.
Well, there's the thing.
I'm feeling.
It turns out that your dad isn't dead at all.
He comes back from the dead as a zombie.
No. He's always been alive, but he's been rebuilt.
Wow.
And you think he's your mortal enemy, but then you realise you could just, that there's probably some good in him.
Is this Adam I'm speaking to?
No, this is Ray. And then you have a fight with him, and then he throws the Emperor into a pit. That's, I didn't mention Ray. The Emperor, but there's an Emperor as well.
Ray, one minute, mate. Hey, can you call 999? We need to get a straitjacket on this kid.
No, I'm fine. I'm doing all right.
At the back door.
That's what they say in all the best meetings, mate. They said that to J.K. Rowling when she turned up with her book.
Well, you know what? I did hear that she got dinged a few times. You know what I mean?
She got whatted?
She got dinged.
Dinged?
Front of the curve. Yeah, dinged.
Don't know what that means.
Not for us, sweetheart.
So, have you got any other questions, Adam?
Oh, he can't really say much, can he?
But have you got any spoiler-free questions?
I've got to tell you, I couldn't give you a spoiler if I wanted to. They don't give you no scripts. Mm. They give you no storylines. They give you nothing. They give you a page. They give you that horrid Dothraki language stuff. Because I played one of the Dothraki leaders. And it was so hard to learn. They give you 4 or 5 pages of that Dothraki dialogue and say, crack on. And then you turn up on set, do your bit,
word from
and then
it?
That's your whack. But I will tell you, I mean, for all the Game of Thrones fans, each lead character, which I do know, their storyline is going to be epic.
How do you find guarding spoilers? Because even though you might not have big spoilers about
the
actual series, are you really
rubbish? I'm rubbish. So if there was a spoiler to be given, I'm the one that's going to give it. I've had more lawsuits than George Benson scored goals.
Right.
I'm telling you, honestly, I am rubbish. So thank God they don't tell you anything.
I don't want you to say them, but you definitely will know spoilers because you are in some scenes. So I work on Red Dwarf, and. Yeah. I find it incredibly, because I now know what happens in the next 2 series of Red Dwarf, because we've filmed them. They're all filmed. Okay. So I now know all of that.
Yeah.
And it's so, and I know all the guest stars, and I know, you know, everyone who's been in it, and all of that is a secret. It's a massive secret.
Well, there was five of us, right?
Right.
There was 5 Dothraki leaders with the Dragon Prince. And all I can tell you is Khaleesi, our sweet little Khaleesi. And beautiful she is. They all got called back to die, and I didn't.
That's a spoiler, isn't it?
That's a spoiler.
I'm sure that's a spoiler.
It's just a spoiler as it can get.
Right, okay, okay.
That's all I've got for you, baby. I'm sorry.
So what? But you have just given the spoiler that you didn't die as well, unless you are doing a double bluff, which...
Well, you know what? You know, it could be a double bluff.
Could be.
You know, they don't tell you anything. They go, what's happening? You know, losing. We're not telling you.
Yeah.
If Tamar's dead, we're not telling you. If he dies, we can see you, and we might bring him back and kill him. They don't tell you anything. But I know the other 4 went back and died.
I mean...
But there you go. It's one of them. Dun, dun, dun.
I've never seen it.
Tamar's going to come back as a Dothraki leader for season 7. Mm. And marry the Dragon Princess.
I mean, you're intriguing the other people in the studio.
Yeah.
But...
Well, that'd be a dream.
I won't commit to it as a program.
We love it.
Yeah.
We love Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Adam and I.
Yeah, Game of Thrones is great. Yeah. I never watched it until I got called on to the show.
Mm.
And I sat there and literally watched the whole lot. I was there for like 4 days, glued to the screen.
It's so good. And Ian McShane's in this series as well, isn't he?
Ian's in 6 as well.
And Jon Snow's back this series, isn't he?
Well, I don't know.
Oh,
everyone's
really
asking that question.
I'm in it.
I'm getting asked that question.
I know, everyone's asked that question about him.
So dead. Do you know what? I mean, look, there was even talk of Sean Bean's character.
Yeah, I heard that. But yeah. He's not.
Well,
I think he's not
the element. I mean, look, it would be a travesty if that show stopped, wouldn't it?
Mm.
I mean, it's brilliant. I mean, look how ballsy they are. The first ever show kills off their leading man in the first series. Where'd you go from there? The language, you know.
The Red Wedding.
The explicit scene.
I mean, there's no reason for me to watch it now, is there?
Actually, the dialogue, I mean, they use the C word.
Mm.
The what?
You know what I mean? The C word.
Good heavens.
Yeah, good heavens. I mean, I find that word.
Well, I use that about three times a week on this show, but I don't get any fucking ratings.
Have you used the C-word on that show?
Yeah, yeah.
The C-word?
I can use everyone. Are we talking about the same one?
Say it then.
What one? What one do you think? What one do you mean?
See you next Tuesday.
Cunt.
You said it.
I know.
You're my hero.
Thank you.
You are my hero.
Yeah, I know. I'm brilliant, aren't I?
You dropped the C-bomb. I'm loving you. Yeah, I want a job on your show.
Bring it off, Com.
Can I bring it? I really want to say it. I really want to say it.
I can't
because I've got the manager sitting next to me.
Oh, yeah.
You can do, and I'll kill you.
All right, well, how about this? How about just look right at your manager and say it? I'm sure
can,
you...
Can I look at him? Can I look at him and say it?
Look right at him and say
see
it.
See you, you soppy little cunt.
There we go,
you
there we go.
Do one?
Yeah.
Oh, that felt so good.
I know, right?
He just said, coming from you.
Every performer in the world wants to do that to the manager. Everyone wants to do that. Good on you.
I mean, listen, managers, what are they? They're no different than pimps, are they? They send you out in the world and take 10% of them. No
fucking hell, I dream of 10%.
Stay home and chill, keeping you company during the coronavirus.